Hello and welcome to the Green Room Golf Course podcast from the British and International Golf Greenkeepers Association. Thanks for listening to this podcast, which sheds a light upon the golf industry and what it takes to maintain a modern course. I hope you enjoy the show. Hey, you cool cats and kittens. Welcome to the latest edition of the Green Room Golf Course podcast. So a huge amount has changed since the last podcast we released. We had a huge program of interviews and conversations recorded that we were due to distribute. And then, well, everything happened. To the extent that I'm recording this podcast with my laptop resting on an ironing board. They tell me this is the new normal. In the place of podcasting, here at Bigger over the past few weeks, we've been working to keep our members safe by providing a huge amount of guidance around what work is safe to complete on the course. We've also given advice on HR matters, legal advice, just a huge amount. It's all there on the website, and there's also some information in the next edition of Greenkeeper International, which you should be coming through your letterbox in the next few days. So far, Bigger has been able to offer all the usual resources and support that you've come to expect as part of your membership, and I'd encourage you to head to our website for more information regarding all that. With everything happening so quickly, our hope for these podcasts is that there'll be another way to keep you up to date with everything that's happening across Bigger and in the wider golf industry. Where possible, we're also going to provide the usual great interviews that you've come to expect, as I think at some point we're all going to get pretty tired of hearing about coronavirus, and it'd just be nice to hear something about some good solid greenkeeping. Before then, though, not quite there yet, today's podcast is going to revisit the webinar that we produced yesterday with Natalie Hunter from Exact Group, giving a huge amount of really important information regarding your rights as an employer or employee at a golf club during this crisis. Exact Group run our helpline service that's available to every Bigger member, and I'd encourage you to give them a call if you've got any further questions. However, just as an indication of how fast this whole situation is moving, Natalie, when I told her that I was going to do this podcast today, she pointed out that the guidance she gave in the webinar about 0 hours has actually already been updated. So she'll be mentioning it within the podcast, but I just wanted to run this past you before we get going. And that's if the employer has been employed or engaged by an employment business for a full 12 months prior to the claim, you can claim for the hire of either the same month's earnings from the previous year, the average month's earnings from the 2019 to 2020 tax year. If the employee has been employed for less than a year, you can claim for an average of their monthly earnings since they started work. That's for 0 hours contracts. So they take an average of your monthly earnings to work out how much you're going to do if you get furloughed. If the employee only started in February 2020, use a pro rata for their earnings so far to claim. Once you've worked out how much of an employee's salary you can claim for, you must then work out the amount of employer national insurance contributions and minimum automatic enrollment employer pension contributions you are entitled to claim. Again, that's to do with 0 hours contracts, so hopefully it won't be relevant to a lot of you, but I thought it was worth mentioning. Also involved with the discussion was Bigger CEO Jim Croxton, who answered a couple of questions from members and gave some really pertinent advice with regards to how we can all help each other through this crisis. Stay safe and well wherever you are, and I hope you enjoy the show.
Everybody, I'm Sammy Strutt, Head of Member Development for Bigger, and I'd like to welcome you to this Continue to Learn Extra webinar. Today we will focus on HR issues during the coronavirus crisis. We are pleased to welcome Natalie Hunter from Exact, who provide Bigger's HR helpline. Also on the webinar today is Jim Croxton, Bigger's CEO, who will be discussing with Natalie many of the HR-related questions that have been asked by Bigger members. By the end of this webinar, we hope that we have helped separate fact from fiction during this ongoing COVID-19 crisis. Please feel free to ask questions via the chat function that can be found at the bottom of your screen. and we will pose questions on your behalf after Natalie has finished her presentation. So without further ado, I'm going to hand over to Natalie to kick us off.
Hello, thank you, Sammy, and hi, Jim. Hello to all of our members. I appreciate that some of us are working from home with challenging kids and dogs and postmen walking past and lots of things. I appreciate, you know, very many of us have been furloughed as well and, you know, lots of different situations. These are very challenging times. They are unprecedented. I know that word has been used in, so much in the last 2 weeks, but they are, you know, we are living through challenging, unprecedented times, and guidance is changing. I'm sure you'll have saw, you know, keeping up to date with the government legislation and the guidance that's coming in. Things are changing, you know, really quite rapidly, and we're doing our very best to keep on board with that, keep up to date with it, and filter it on through the members. So today's webinar, I'll go through some slides. I'll talk a wee bit more about myself, the rest of the HR team, and the HR team who specifically can support the BEGA members. So I've got maybe about 7 or 8 slides to go through, and as Sammy has said, I will take some questions towards the end, so please feel free to use the chat facility. That's what it's there for. There's no such thing as a silly question. Believe me, the questions that we've dealt with in the last few weeks, we have covered everything, you know, and we've never been in this situation before. Touch wood, we'll never be in it again. We certainly didn't cover this off at uni. So please feel free to ask anything that you want to ask. And my contact details will come up on screen towards the end. So even afterwards, you know, if you don't want to ask in this forum and you want to ask later on, you can come back to me. The telephone number is going to be there, my email address, and my colleague's email address, Alan, who also supports the BEGA partnership. So please, you know, this is what we're here for. We've taken a lot of queries in the last few weeks, and, you know, pre-COVID 19 days, I deal with region of maybe a dozen different queries each week. So, you know, that's what the service is there for. Please, please use it. Okay, so I'll go on to go through my slides. So who we are and what we do within the BEGA partnership. So my name's Natalie Hunter. As I said, I will go on and talk a wee bit more about myself in the next couple of slides, but I'm an HR and employment law consultant, and I work with Exact Group Limited, and we have partnered with BEGA to provide some HR cover. We were founded as a business in the year 2000, and we look after approximately 42,000 businesses across the UK, and that's in all sectors. So that's public sector, private sector, and the third sector, which is charities. So we look after lots and lots of different people, and that's across all different industries. So from high-end solicitors right through to haulage companies and everything in between. In terms of just HR, we look after around 800 customers. So you can see yourself from the figures, the vast majority of our clients use us for both health and safety and HR. And sometimes there's a little bit of crossover in the HR and health and safety world. You know, we'll go on to talk about things like the essential tasks. So sometimes we need to revert to health and safety, and sometimes health and safety will come to us for advice. So in terms of looking after BEGA, we're very well placed. We have a really good team. We're based in Belsill, which is in North Lanarkshire. So for our non-Scottish members who are taking part today, we are within the commuter belt for both Glasgow and Edinburgh. So we're kind of halfway in between both of them. So we're really well placed. We get out and about and see some clients and things. So I don't know if maybe some people will remember me from being at the BEGA conference down in Harrogate. It was myself and Stephanie. So I have I've met some people in passing, so that was a really good conference to be involved in, and I hope to see you again in January coming. The HR team itself is made up of 11 HR and employment law advisors and consultants, and we have recently added to the team for the first time. We have our own in-house employment solicitor. we do a lot of litigation work, and you know, the fees, I'm sure you imagine, are quite considerable. So the business made the decision to acquire our own in-house lawyer. So we're really, again, well placed to support members because we have that facility. The health and safety team consists of 5 in-house advisors. So they work within our group, and we've got lots of regional advisors, and so they're placed throughout the UK, and they work with clients, you know, in their own region when required. If anyone remembers us from being in Harrogate, we had Mel Deans with us. He is one of our regional health and safety consultants. So we're very well placed within the HR team. We have worked across all the different sectors. So there's a lot of really good discussion takes place. There's no situation that we haven't dealt with, you know, in some form over the years of experience that we all have. So, you know, we're very well placed to support the members. So there's me. And that was pre-COVID-19, when the hairdressers were still open, etc. So we're all coming out of quarantine a bit more cave woman like. But there's me there. I worked in corporate finance for a long time. Firstly, I was a nurse within Glasgow Royal Infirmary in the A&E department. So have learned learned how to deal with stakeholders at all levels, as they would say. After that, I went into corporate finance for many years, and whilst on maternity leave, I took redundancy and retrained in HR management, and I'm currently working towards my CIPD. So similar to your CPD, it is professional learning, so it's an accreditation, and it's really important that you have it in the world of HR. So I'm well placed to help the members. And there's my colleague Alan, Alan Coulter. So Alan's got over 20 years experience, and again, he's worked across a wide variety of sectors. He's educated up to postgrad level, and prior to joining Exact, Alan was an area director for RBS Mentor, and he had a spell of being a self-employed consultant, and he joined the Exact team. Alan's wife's a GP, so he's been our go-to in the group chat in the last couple of weeks with anything health related. So Alan's a great addition also. And there's Kelly. Kelly is our employment solicitor, and Kelly has her honours degree in law. She's got 5 years post-qualified experience. She's worked across employment law, civil litigation, family law, tribunal law, and she had a 2-year traineeship post-uni. So she's 7 years qualified. She's acted for a range of respondent clients, including major public sector clients, so a couple of the universities up here in Scotland, and the prison as well, and local government. So again, Kelly is really grounded. She's very, she knows the battles to pick, and she knows, you know, when you know, when you've got a chance of winning. So she's very, very good to have as part of the team. And there's Tom. Sammy and I did a trial run of this webinar the other day, and I had no photograph of Tom, and I felt really bad. But there's his picture there. There are other brands of soft drink available. Tom's our union man, so he is a very, very good addition to help look after the bigger members. He's been a professional litigator for over 20 years. He worked for Unite the Union in an area manager role. So he's got a really, really good understanding of process and, you know, the best way of going about something. So if members come to us and, you know, they want to they want some help because of, say they're, you know, they're facing a disciplinary, for example, Tom knows the process. So he knows if the club aren't doing something that they're supposed to do, etc. So again, a very, very good solid pair of hands to have as part of the bigger Exact partnership. And he's a keen golfer, which is helpful. He's got a really good understanding of the industry. And we understand, you know, the challenges that everyone faces, and especially just now. So ways in which the HR team support the members. So we provide telephone advice in the first instance. So you know, pre-COVID-19, you know, when we dealt with other things, not just, you know, the COVID situation. The majority of the queries that I deal with on a day-to-day basis would be contract queries. So summer hours, winter hours, helping members work out their annual leave, you know, helping them work out notice periods, things like that. A lot of members have came to me as well, and it's good. It really, really is good. It's the messages filtering out. Phone us at the first opportunity. So, you know, you don't pick up the phone and say, oh, I've got this meeting this afternoon. And, you know, see, when you get the letter and you're invited to your probation review meeting or a performance review meeting, an investigation, anything like that, pick up the phone straight away. You know, it might be a case of, you know, you're given just kind of top line advice and you go and have your meeting and then you call us back and we give you some more support. But genuinely, you know, pick up the phone. That's what we're here for. So we assist, you know, members in helping them with the process. So say, for example, you know, you get an invite letter for a disciplinary and it's 1 o'clock that afternoon. You know, we'd be saying to you, no, they've not followed the process. And, you know, members are saying, who can I bring with me? And we're explaining what that looks like and things. So most of the time, you know, members have got a really good understanding, but want to talk it through with someone. And that's what we're here for as well. Sometimes we do some signposting too. So, you know, whilst we are HR or employment law, we can help a wee bit with payroll and pensions, things like that. There are other things that aren't in our realm. And we can signpost you on to things like health and wellbeing, so money matters, counselling, things like that. If we don't know, we'll help you to find out. So COVID-19 and HR support, and we will go on to take some questions later on, but this is just to kind of give a brief overview. So, you know, you can only imagine the huge amount of inquiries that we've had in the last 2 weeks. Thankfully, we're starting to kind of quieten down a little bit just now because, you know, so many people are at home, and whether they're, you know, they're self-isolating, they're shielding, they're furloughed, etc. So, you know, and that goes for, you know, business owners as well. So it is a bit quieter. The last few weeks have been a baptism of fire. So, you know, that's what we're here for, but and pick up the phone. There is an increased level of guidance available now from the government regarding things like pay and social distancing, measures for clubs to take, you know, how you can support your employer and things like that. So that's certainly been helpful for us because the last few weeks we have, you know, just been trying to give advice based on, you know, common sense and, you know, what feels fair and reasonable. So it's good that the government are now, you know, filtering more and more information out to us. As I said before, we will continue to stay up to date with changes. We're all actively involved in webinars, you know, ACAS training and things like that, and best practice. So, you know, we're all involved in a conference call every day, and, you know, we have our own, you know, support networks that we're reaching out to make sure that we're all, you know, given the best advice possible. And then it can be implemented and filtered through onto the Bega website. So I think Jim has collated some questions. I don't know if you want to give me anything just now, Jim.
Yeah, absolutely, Natalie. Thanks very much for doing this today.
Thank you.
I know you've had an incredibly busy time at Exact Hours, so really appreciate you fitting
thank
us in.
Thank you. No, I appreciate you allowing me to do so.
And thank you also to Exact for coming with us on this sort of HR helpline journey since August last year. We are very proud of our legal helpline, which offers a valuable service, but so many of our issues our members face, we feel we can hopefully find a solution to before they get legal. So this has really filled a big gap for us. Now, the first thing to comment on is your dog got quite a lot of love during the initial part of your presentation, sitting in the background there. To any of the guys listening, and there's a good turnout, which is excellent, if you've got a question that I don't cover in the next few minutes, please stick it up on the chat function, which should be at the bottom or top of your screen, and we'll try and get through as many of those as possible. I think the big question, Natalie, that we fielded lots and lots of questions on is around furloughing. So yeah. I thought we might just perhaps start at the beginning mm-hmm. with that. We've actually gone through it ourselves with some support from you guys, and we've actually furloughed a number of our own team because certain aspects of our work has gone quiet. Yeah. Let's sort of start at the beginning. Who can be furloughed, and how should an employer go about it?
Yep. So thank you. Any employee who is PAYE can be furloughed. So whether you are part-time, whether you're full-time, whether you're fixed term, whether you are a 0 hours, whether you're variable, whether you're casual worker, all those things, as long as you are on the PAYE system, as in you're not a contractor or self-employed, you know, you're not in charge of paying your own tax and ANI, then you can be furloughed. In terms of who is eligible for furlough, if there's no work available, and you know, whether that's because of COVID-19 itself, you know, or you know, you can't get the supplies in, so you've got to close the clubhouse, that sort of thing. If your employer cannot provide you with work to do, then you're eligible to go onto the furlough scheme. So for example, I'm very lucky, and Sammy and I discussed this earlier on, you know, we're lucky that part of our role can be done from home, but you know, that's not the case for a lot of people. So you know, that's why at Exact we knew that the lockdown was coming because of the furlough scheme being implemented, because obviously that protects people and allows them to be, you know, away from the workplace and away, you know, being safe and being at home. So any, to go back to your question, any employee who's on the PAYE scheme can be eligible for the furlough. And in terms of going about it, the payroll provider would, it's very much like if you are off because you're on maternity leave or you're on paternity leave or you're on sick leave. When you are processed on payroll, there's a code for, you know, each of the things, and that's inputted next to you, and that's given to HMRC. Sure. Sorry, my dog's over trying to give me a cuddle or a kiss at the moment. So yeah, HMRC process you as being a certain status during that payroll period. So they'll have a new code, to simplify it, they'll have a new code to put next to you, and that information will be given to HMRC. In terms of payment, you know, a lot of clubs and a lot of businesses across, you know, all the different client sectors that we have are in a fortunate position, and they're able to pay their staff as normal and then reclaim it from HMRC. Not everyone's in that position, you know, and sadly, there are a lot of businesses who, like people, live, you know, week to week, they live month to month, and they have to get the money in from customers first. And that's not an ideal situation, and you know, I'm not belittling it in any way, but there will be, you know, employees in the UK who are sadly having to wait for their pay. That's not something that we can, you know, we can try and shuggle along a bit. It's just, you know, down to the business.
And I know that our team didn't have furloughing or laying off as part of their contract, so we had to gain their permission.
That's right,
but it's the right thing for the business. This is probably true with, I would think, many of our members, that this isn't written into a standard contract. So it has to be a discussion between the employer and the employee.
It does, yeah. So, you know, whilst the contract should have the temporary layoff and short-time working clause within it to allow for people to be laid off, you know, being a bit sensible about it, it's, you know, it's force de majeure. It's something that nobody could have, you know, prevented or, you know, planned for. So to be fair, you know, Tribunal would look at it and say, you've done the right thing by the staff member. They're getting 80% of pay. Without having the short-time working and temporary layoff clause, you could argue that you should still receive the other 20%. However, we're telling people, be sensible. You know, this is an emergency situation that we're in. It's something that we've never faced before. And it's to stop redundancies from taking place. You know, I remember, Jim, the days of the 4-day week and the 3-day week. My dad was an engineer, and you know, and I remember being, you know, a small child, being in the car and going up to pick him up from work, and him coming out and saying, "That's us, we're on a 3-day week next week." I remember those days, and it was, everybody was in the same boat, you know, so we all went on a 3-day or a 4-day week to, you know, to help the business. Yes, we're asking a lot of staff, but we want jobs to come back to as well. So, you know, there needs to be a level of commitment on both sides of the relationship.
I think so far, I'm pleased to say the majority of people we've spoken to,
absolutely,
the family situation has worked in a pretty civilized way. We've seen the majority of clubs reduce their maintenance team down in line with essential maintenance guidelines. And the team has understood that if there's to be a business to come back to, then some guys taking this off this firm opportunity is the right thing to do.
Yeah.
I think it's important to mention the minimum 3 week period. We've had a number of questions around people saying, could we furlough two people but then work part time? My understanding is that someone who's furloughed has to cease work completely for a minimum of 3 weeks.
Yeah.
So it seems the sensible thing to do is to reduce down to the minimum number of full-time employees you need, yep, mm-hmm, and furlough the rest. We did get a question about staff alternating, almost like a roll-on, roll-off substitutes. Is that possible?
It is possible, but we would, you know, we would urge businesses and clubs. So when I say businesses, I do often mean clubs too. We would urge them to be sensible about it, because what we're, you know, the whole point of the furlough is to stop, you know, to have people staying at home. So unless you've got a real business rationale and a real business need for alternating, then we would urge people to be sensible about it, because you don't want people leaving the house and coming back, you know, if there's not a real need for it. We get it, you know, that sometimes, you know, some people will be furloughed and some won't, but we need to understand that there is a rationale behind that. So, for example, our HR administrators, if anyone's going to be furloughed, it'll be them first, because there are things that, as a consultant, we can do that the administrators can't. So, you know, as to be sensible about it, they'll probably be furloughed first. I would love to be furloughed. I need a rest as well. But, you know, I've got to be sensible and think, you know, it's on both sides. What's good for the business? But yeah, to answer your question, it's 3 weeks. It is 3 weeks.
So it would be feasible for a business to furlough one member of a team for 3 weeks and then to bring them back into the team and furlough somebody else.
It would.
And if, and this is only an if it is felt as time progresses that the amount of maintenance clubs need to do or are permitted to do by the government increases, mm-hmm, then after a period of 3 weeks, a furloughed employee could be brought back into the team to join the team. Thank you.
And obviously, we are urging clubs to be sensible in terms of their health and safety as well. We don't want anyone to be at risk. So that's our social distancing. That's the, yeah, you know, hand sanitizer available, the washing facilities available. You know, we don't want to see non-essential work being carried out. We really are asking, you know, to be careful and be sensible about it. You know, health and well-being, health and safety of the employees is number one. You know, everything else we can fix.
Yeah, absolutely. As a members association, that's been our absolute priority from the start. And it's been, and we'll come on to some slightly sort of more unpleasant questions a bit later on, because there are still some members out there that are being put, I think, in unsafe or unnecessary positions, and we'll talk about those. A couple more questions on furloughing. There's been some confusion. We've actually heard of clubs suggesting an idea that staff are furloughed and then they come back and volunteer to maintain the golf course.
No.
Your thoughts on that kind of thing?
Absolutely not. So the whole premise of furlough is to protect employees as well. No, absolutely not. You shouldn't be doing any work that contributes to the running of the business. You could volunteer elsewhere. You know, we saw the uptake for the NHS volunteers. That's, you know, fantastic. But if clubs are found to be, you know, bending the rules of the furlough, then, you know, no, HMRC will be all over that. And the whole point is to have people at home, away from the business, you know, protecting their health and their well-being. So, you know, volunteering for your own club, no. Anything that could be seen to be creating revenue for your club, absolutely not.
Thanks, Natalie. And we've had this conversation already about what our own team that have been furloughed can and can't do. And you know, essentially they can't take part in anything. They shouldn't be answering emails. They shouldn't be answering phone calls. And Natalie made the point earlier on my chat with her that it's a little bit like being on holiday. You know, when your furlough period is starting to come to an end, it's perfectly reasonable to make contact with work and find out what's happened so they know what to come back to. But realistically, if you're furloughed, you're off work completely. For that minimum 3 week period.
for that minimum of three-week period, as we were talking about, you know, it's, we all do, you know, we're professional, and, you know, you might phone your boss, you know, you land on the Sunday and you're back to work on the Monday, you'll maybe give them a phone, you know, what have I missed? Is there anything I need to know before I come back tomorrow? You know, you might keep in touch with your colleagues, you know, it's, we've talked a lot in the last couple of weeks about maintaining good communication. So, you know, have a WhatsApp chat group and, you know, keep your culture the way it is. So, you know, if you're a team that like to, you know, communicate lots and lots, funny pictures, you know, all that sort of thing, then yeah, we're not saying, you know, you're in hibernation for 3 weeks and you can't talk to anybody, but don't be doing work for the club that can be tied back to the venue. Absolutely not.
And we've had the same advice you've had, Natalie, that the revenue, HMRC, when we come to the end of this, are going to have an audit system in place, and they will forensically check whether you, as an employer, abided by the rules.
Absolutely.
And if you didn't, your claim for furlough, the grant, is just going to disappear very, very quickly. And that would be ridiculous to a club to furlough staff and then risk that over a little bit of maintenance.
Yeah, it really, really would. And we understand that, you know, I think the situation will come, Jim, where some of our team will be furloughed. Training and learning and development's a bit different. So if, for example, I was furloughed and took the decision to go into ACAS and, you know, do some refreshing training on Chupi transfer or something like that, that's okay, because that's, you know, my L&D. But my employer couldn't say to me, Natalie, you've been furloughed, we want you to put together a training package for Bega on Chupi. No, sorry, that's bringing revenue for the business. So you're quite right. And HMRC aren't, you know, they're not giving us anything for free. So they are going to really be stringent on going in and checking. So we have to be careful. It's fraud. At the end of the day, you know, it can come back to us, and businesses will be heavily fined if they're found to be bending the rules. So, you know, it's best to just, you know, treat it with the respect, because we were very, very shocked in the HR world for it to be 80%, Jim. You know, we were all thinking 60. You know, if they give us 60, that'll be good. So let's not, you know, destroy what they've given us by, you know, bending the rules.
Yeah, I agree. I was absolutely gobsmacked when the Chancellor announced the 80%. I thought it was life-changing for our industry.
Absolutely, and across the board, yeah, absolutely. And it's saving lives, because people aren't going to risk it by going to work when they shouldn't be. So, yeah.
What we do know,
I take my hat off to them.
What we do know, Natalie, and this audience knows better than most, is that golf clubs do have a habit of acting within their own interpretation of general rules guidelines. So this is really important. And I just try and reassure the audience that the whole golf industry governing bodies, home unions, PGA, GCMA, RNA, and ourselves are all working together on this to try and make sure golf clubs understand all of this point. Last couple of questions on furloughing for now, Natalie. First of all, annual leave. I believe there's been some guidance recently on annual leave for furloughed employees.
Yeah, so.
And non-furloughed employees.
And non-furloughed employees, yeah. So HMRC are a wee bit, you know, a wee bit cute on it and saying it's down to the business, you know. So, yeah, you know, we're being very careful. If you're on furlough, you cannot be on annual leave at the same time. So you can't have annual leave taken from you. They have changed the guidelines in that you can carry over annual leave, whereas before, the only times you could carry over annual leave is if you were on long-term sick or you were on maternity. You had to then have leave carried over if you didn't get a chance to use it. So they've relaxed the rules a little bit on that, so that you can carry leave over if you don't get a chance to use it. So if you're on furlough, you can't be on furlough and take annual leave at the same time. There are businesses, you know, who are paying the 80% of salary, and they're having discussions with the employee. Say, for example, they're furloughed for the whole of April. Do you want payment on top of your 80% for your 2.5 days that you've accrued? If you agree that with the employee, then that's okay. But you can't say you're furloughed for the month of April, you're getting 80% of your salary, and you're on annual leave for a week. No, that's losing my annual leave. So, you know, come to us if you face that situation and you need, you know, a wee bit of guidance, a wee bit of, you know, help to put together an email or whatever, come to us. That's what we're here for. If you're not furloughed, so for example, myself, I'm not furloughed. I'm still working from home. Homeschooling, home exercising, home looking after the pets. So yes, it's been challenging. I have annual leave for next week, which I'm keeping in because, you know, yes, it's not ideal. We're not getting to do the things that we would have done, but it's still a breakaway from work. And as, you know, I said earlier on, we do look at things from both sides of the employment relationship. If we don't return to the workplace, say, 1st of June, and my manager's got 11 people that she's trying to accommodate for annual leave, then it can be difficult. By the letter of the law, if you give someone double the amount of notice, so if you give them the same amount of notice to the days, you can enforce annual leave. So if clubs say, right, we're coming back on the 1st of June and I want you to take 5 days, you know, the 15th of June, for example, yes, they're within their rights to do that. And if that happens again, come to us and we can help and look at it and say yea or nay, whether that, you know, whether that falls in the realms of reasonableness. But in terms of if you're not furloughed, you have annual leave already booked in, then the employer isn't under any obligation to take it back, you know, to let you use it some other time. They might, you know, but have that conversation with them. It's about being fair and reasonable on both sides, because, you know, if in, you know, when times are better and we're back to normality, we're going to need staff to work as well. So we want to keep the relationship as positive as possible. Nobody likes enforcing anything. You know, I would never say to a business or a club, yeah, just enforce this and just enforce that. We don't want that. You know, like you've said, you know, the members do have the support of, you know, lots of different organisations and us. So we'll always try and keep the relationship as positive as possible. So if you're on furlough, to kind of summarise that, if you're on furlough, you can't take annual leave at the same time. You could be on furlough for 3 weeks and then have a week's annual leave at your full pay, but not at the same time.
Okay. Thank you. We've had one question as well around staff on 0 hours contracts.
Mm-hmm. And how do you work that out?
How would you calculate the salary?
Yep. So prior to the guidance that was updated at some point last week, we were saying to go back 12 weeks because in the world of 0 hours contracts, we use a 12-week reference point to work out pay. If you're going on annual leave, for example, if you've got variable hours as well, we use a 12-week reference point. So before we were given the guidelines, we were all, you know, across the HR world, we were all saying 12 weeks because that felt fair and reasonable. But they published some guidance last week. And if you go on to gov.uk, and there's lots and lots about furlough. It's really, really helpful. But in terms of 0 hours or variable hour staff, what they do is they look at it from February 19 to February 20. So if you have a year's service with the club, then they have to average it out over the year. If you don't, then they look at February 2020. They can't say March because March was so higgledy-piggledy. We were in, we were off, you know, that sort of thing. So, or whichever's higher. So if you have got a year service, they have to look at both. They've got to look at your year from February 19 to February 20 or February 20, whichever's higher, and base it on that.
Thanks, Natalie. I'm going to move on from furloughing just for the moment because there's a couple of things we want to make sure we cover. There have been one or two more questions, which I'll try and get back to. I think probably furloughing is in some ways a massive positive of this situation. As I said before, it's been a lifesaver, I think, for lots of golf businesses and our members. Yeah. We're still getting quite a lot of inquiries from our members who are still being asked to work and are uncomfortable about doing so. Mm-hmm. And this can be a range of reasons. One is that they don't feel safe in the workplace. One is that they don't feel that their club are abiding by the guidance that the government has set out and they're being asked to do non-essential work. Mm-hmm. And probably in some ways, and even worse, is that some people who have got people in their homes that are at risk and they're very concerned about travelling to work and back and being exposed to the virus and potentially bringing that back. What are the options for the employees in those circumstances?
Okay, so we covered off earlier on, we covered off the shielding. So if you receive the letter and you personally are in one of the high risk, very high risk categories, you will have a letter from the NHS, and that would cover you because you would be able to shield. If you're choosing to self-isolate, then that's obviously different. And if there's really nothing that you can do, so for example, my dad's very high risk, he's got one lung. My mum's a nurse and she's still out working. So they very much split the house into two. My mum's loving life. She's got the downstairs part. My dad's up the stairs. He's like flowers in the attic. So she's loving life. They're taking the steps because she has to go to work. She's a key worker. So they've taken the steps to do that. Not everyone can do that, and I appreciate that. You know, you should try your very best. But ultimately, if you're making the decision that you're not going to work, then we physically can't, you know, we can't force anyone. We can't chain you to the radiator and say you've got to come to work. If you're self-isolating or you've got your own symptoms, then you would be covered by the sickness absence route. So if you've got contractual sick pay, then you would get that. If you don't have contractual sick pay, you would have SSP. Now, the current guidelines are that businesses are able to reclaim the first 14 days of SSP. The law changed about 10 years ago. You used to be able to reclaim SSP, and then they removed that. So they've went back to olden times so that businesses can reclaim the first 14 days. So ultimately, you need to have a conversation and try and get to the bottom of, you know, what is the issue? Is it that the club can do something better? Is it that, you know, perhaps it's your own anxieties, so, you know, it's something for you to look at, or is it somewhere in between? But ultimately, keep a note of everything. Keep a note of any conversations that you have. And if it really is, you know, it's unsafe for you to be there, it's your own decision to make, you know. And we would not, and, you know, I'll go on record of saying it, we would not be telling clubs to take disciplinary action. If I come to you and say, I am too scared to be here because of X, Y, and Z, I wouldn't be treating you as able. I wouldn't be saying, you know, you're off, you know, and we've not given you permission to be off. That's your decision whether to keep working or not. Either go down the sickness route, or can you furlough or shield?
Thanks, Natalie. I think we need to still make clear though that if you do refuse to come to work, then potential disciplinary action could come from that.
Yeah, if we have removed all of the barriers, absolutely. And people are still choosing not to come to work, we know that there's a difference. You know, if you're the only person working in that club and you don't see a soul for, you know, 500 metres, never mind two, then, you know, the likelihood is it would be fair and reasonable for you to attend work and do essential tasks. You know, what those tasks are, I know that, you know, the information is there for people to look at. That's a different situation to somebody working in the cafe, you know, and 500 folk coming in and out every day. So, yeah, it would be looked at case to case.
And for those that are worried, and this is practically all of our concerns are around people that are worried on health reasons. Every employer's first duty is of care to its employees.
Absolutely.
And if you are genuinely in an unsafe position, then you should contact Natalie, the exact team direct, and try and get some advice on how to proceed in that situation. Thank you for that. We just, as an aside for the members listening, we feel very strongly that any club that is sort of flouting, shall we say, the essential maintenance guidelines should be brought to task. We're working as hard as we can with the rest of the sports to try and bring in a mechanism. We've been asked on social media and all sorts that we should be somehow enforcing this situation. And as a members association, we have no control over the facilities. Delighted that the RNA have supported and helped produce the essential maintenance guidelines. Mm-hmm. We're working, and I'm hoping the rest of the sport will help us to work with clubs that are not playing by the rules. For first and foremost, for the safety of those involved, and secondly, because, and I said this on the other webinar the other day, we are currently relatively privileged as a sport that the government has allowed maintenance to continue. It hasn't happened in other countries. Some of the countries are not allowed to maintain golf courses. It could be removed for our sport. And if that was the case, and every golf club, and I've heard of a golf course today where the police have prohibited the staff from working because they felt it was non-essential, that'll probably get worked through, but this would be pretty catastrophic for golf business in the long term. If this lockdown goes on for a period, and then golf courses aren't maintained at all, then this will affect the business of golf substantially. So thank you. I'm just going to look quickly through some of the questions. One question here is, if the Prime Minister reduces the lockdown and staff are returned and then he announces another lockdown, are they able to go back on furlough? I guess that's a bit of crystal ball gazing. But
we've had a lot of crystal ball questions in the last few weeks. What if and what if and what if? And you're like, I'm away down the rabbit hole here with all these what ifs. If that happened, and honestly, Jim, I keep laughing saying, see, 3 weeks ago, that even saying the words government enforced lockdown, I feel as if I'm living in a Call of Duty. I feel as if I'm living in one of my teenage boys, you know, PlayStation games. But yes, I mean, the furlough went hand in hand with the lockdown. As I said earlier on, we knew that the lockdown was coming when the Chancellor announced the, you know, the furlough scheme, because the whole premise, the whole point is to get people home and get them safe, you know, and to stop the spread, etc. So yes, you know, I would 99%, you know, be absolutely positive if another lockdown happened later on down the line, they would reintroduce furlough, because it goes hand in hand. It's the whole point is you know, to keep us away from the workplace and safe.
Yeah, I would just say that anybody that submitted a question that I sort of think we've covered, if we haven't got an answer on this, then either email directly the contact details on the screen or the info@bigger.co.uk email, and we'll make sure that we clarify those for you. At this stage, it seems like we're more or less out of questions that have been submitted. We have had a question about, can an apprentice worker still complete on-the-job training during work time in this essential maintenance world? I don't know the answer to that. Natalie may have a view. What I do know is the GTC, which Bigger is part of, which governs the sort of apprentice schemes, is working with all the providers on that to try and get definitive guidance. So I would actually address that call, depending on what Natalie says now, to the GTC as well.
Yeah, I mean, we need to be sensible about it. It's very similar to employees just now have been furloughed and they're in their probation period. We need to be sensible. Their probation's extended. I, for example, am doing my CIPD, and there are elements of that that involve face-to-face. So we're doing role plays, performance management, that yada yada. So technology, and Sammy will have a giggle at me getting better at technology after a run through on Tuesday. But you know, if we can use technology, and you know, there's coursework that they can do from home and things like that, then you know, that may continue. Take the advice from the governing body. You know, up here it would be like your CITB and things like that. They'll keep you right. There's things you'll not be able to do because it involves physically being there and carrying out the work. So, you know, they will be lax, and they'll allow for extensions where possible. They're not going to say, we've got to July and you've not finished X, Y, and Z. Well, I've not been able to because I've not physically been allowed to go on the course. So they're going to look at it sensibly. Nobody wants us not to qualify or get our qualification or move up a level, you know, that sort of thing. So they will work together, you know, to help the apprentices progress throughout their training.
Thanks, Natalie. We've had a little flurry of questions. Some of these, I think, will be reasonably short answers, but we'll try and get through all of them as we've got time. I've had two questions, actually, around should employers have spoken to staff before they put people on furlough, and a similar question was, do members of staff need to give their permission? I guess this depends on their contractual status, first and foremost.
It does depend on your contract, but being sensible about it, the club is closed. There's no work to do. So you could say that, you know, I'm not given permission. Okay, so you don't get pay at all then. You know, it's a kind of catch-22. In an ideal world, yes, we would love to have consulted and, you know, met with you and went through all your questions and your queries. But ultimately, we can't always do that. So in terms of speaking to employees, yes, of course, you know, if we could have, then, you know, we would have had one-to-one meetings and things like that. But ultimately, the situation's taken over. So I think people have done their best across the board.
I think it's worth reminding people as well that the actual title of this furlough scheme is the Coronavirus Job Retention Scheme.
Yeah.
And the whole purpose of it is to try and help businesses get through this period so the jobs are still available at the end. And I think it's employees obligation really to try and work with their employer to help the business through this period, so that there are businesses left at the end of this. A similar question you may have just answered there, but if somebody, what happens if an employee refuses to be furloughed? I guess that they could be at risk of redundancy.
Could, yeah. And, you know, to not put too fine a point on it, but ultimately we could start looking at disciplinary then, because it would be failure to follow a reasonable management instruction, because to put a staff member onto the furlough scheme means that we're able to protect the business, because we're able to get 80% of their salary back from HMRC. So to refuse that really would go to the root of the employment relationship, you know, so I would be very, very careful.
Okay. I've had about four different questions around volunteering, but volunteering to work at a golf course. In this case, somebody else's golf course. So questions around whether members can volunteer, whether a greenkeeper could volunteer at a club that he doesn't work at, but he's a member at. And then one question which I'm worried about happening, because I think the revenue would clamp down this pretty quickly, which is volunteers swapping golf clubs. So essentially being furloughed at one club and volunteering at another one. Mm-hmm. What I would say is we're seeking some clarification over this, because the permission given by the government says very specifically that in order to carry out security and essential maintenance, greenkeepers can still work. They haven't permitted volunteers to carry on working in this environment specifically. It doesn't mean they can't.
Yeah.
We haven't got clear guidance around that yet. I do know that there are golf clubs around the country that rely upon volunteer work, some of the very smaller clubs, and I guess artisans would come into this as well. So we are trying to get some guidance on this from government or from wherever we can to try and give some clear guidance. Mm-hmm. I think it's clear that swapping golf clubs would be a fraudulent activity.
Absolutely. You would I would agree with you. Yeah, absolutely.
And you'll be caught out. Particularly as I've heard of some clubs looking to furlough their entire staff, maintenance staff.
And then swap with another club.
This is going to last for months. If this lasted for 3 weeks, then I think you could not maintain a golf course and come back to something resembling a golf course. If this lasted 3 months and you've still got a golf course at the end of it, you've defrauded the government if you furloughed all your staff.
Absolutely. And, you know, as we said, this whole scheme has been set up to protect the employees, but also to protect the club. They are allowing, as you said, they are allowing a small amount of essential work to be carried out. You know, it's the same as me going out for a 40-minute run every day. If people really, if they abuse it, it will be taken away. And like you've said, you know, we'll go back to something that does not resemble a golf course and jobs will be lost. So be very, very mindful of that.
I've got an interesting question here. Not that they're not all interesting, but...
even more interesting, yeah.
An individual was on a fixed term contract which finished on the 28th of February. Mm-hmm. Are they entitled to furlough? Now, they would have been on PAYE on the 28th of February, which is the cut-off date. Mm-hmm. But the fixed-term nature of the contract, would they be entitled to be...
If the work still exists. So we had a similar situation last week with a girl whose fixed term was coming to an end, but the work was also coming to an end and it wasn't COVID-19 related. It was a project that she was working on. So if you can justify that if it hadn't been for COVID-19, you may have been able to extend that contract, then yeah, you could be eligible for furlough. If you can't justify that, then that's bending the rules.
And so an employer could conceivably, because they're on PAYE on the 28th of February, add them back to their staff, but they would be taking their own risk as employer by putting someone to their staff that they would then be left with at the end. So it sounds like a pretty difficult situation. Yeah. Okay.
Now, Jim, it's difficult. You know, that we've had this conversation. It's very difficult. We're human and we want to help people as well. Ultimately, though, we also have HMRC's responsibilities. So, you know, I've saw businesses across the land, you know, I'm going to take my granny on and put her on my payroll and furlough her so she gets some money. And we're like, no, it's very, very dangerous. It's like working for cash in hand. So you want to take that risk? Okay, we can't support that. All we can do is give you the risks, you know, and different things, you know, and different ways of going about something. So, you know, it's very risky. HMRC don't give us anything for free.
No, and this is billions of pounds a week.
Yeah.
So HMRC will put
that's
a
why it's taken them so long to build the portal as well. You know, as much as I'm saying, you know, it's a code and they'll put it in next to your name, my cousin works for HMRC and I can only imagine what their IT guys are going through just now, because this is why it's taken them so long. It's not an easy process and it's a lot of money. Well, I think we'll all be working till we're about 95 and, you know, we'll lose our free prescriptions up here in Scotland. We'll be paying for our bins to get emptied. Lots and lots of things. It's not free. And this is what we're trying to get across to businesses. Be careful, because if we bend the rules and we're seen to be abusing it, for example, one of my companies I looked after in my previous line of work were a scaffolding company. And after the IR 35, they had to payroll so many of their staff, because they were told by HMRC, if you don't, we will come in with a fine tooth comb and we will go through everything. So that's what we're telling businesses just now. You bend the rules too much, you're seen to be abusing it, and they will come in and you'll be left, you know, you'll not know about hurt you. So, you know, be very careful.
I agree. And I do think that HMRC will put a significant team on the audit of this. I've spoken to businesses already that are being very careful about their furloughing because they don't want to fall foul of this. Because I think in greenkeeping, it's relatively straightforward. If you reduce your maintenance levels, then clearly you have staff who are surplus to requirements because of the COVID-19 outbreak. Furloughing is very clear. We've had the same situation with our own business. There are some projects that we are no longer doing because of the outbreak. Therefore, we've been able to furlough some staff.
The same with my team, Jim. You know, there's, as I said before, there's 11 of us. There's a couple of HR admin. As our clients are on lockdown and on furlough and at home and not working, you know, we're finding it the last couple of weeks, yes, it's been manic, but even this week, we've found it to be a lot more settled. As we go on to the next few weeks, we're going to, you know, there's going to be surplus of requirements in the HR team as well. So, you know, it is across the board. So, yeah.
I think an interesting question. I think something that should be clarified anyway. Question saying, after the initial 3-week period, does it continue day to day, week to week, or is it another 3-week period?
Another 3-week period, Jim, yeah.
So does that mean, though, that in the fourth week you could recall somebody? You could recall somebody at a day's notice?
No, it should be a fresh 3-week period. That's what we know just now, and that may change. But as far as we know just now, it's 3 weeks block at a time. So if you furlough someone, that's them for that 3-week period.
Okay, that's interesting.
And if you stop people from doing, well, I'll put you on a furlough and then next week I need you and then the week after I'll furlough you. It's to stop that, because the whole point is if for example, I went out today and I met somebody with the virus, you know, I could be a carrier, for example, you know, whatever the word does, for the next 2 weeks. So I should be at home for 3 weeks. So that's, you know, it goes hand in hand. That might change as the COVID numbers change and, you know, the government, if we come up with that, you know, the vaccines and stuff like that, that might change and they might change the 3-week block. But currently that's the understanding we have. It's got to be a 3-week block.
Okay. And I think probably the final question now, I've had an interesting question. Is there a procedure of reporting clubs that break the rules, as they will potentially ruin things for those that are following the regulations? This is not specifically an HR issue. As I mentioned before, we intend to try and get the golf industry to help us to make sure that clubs that are abusing any of these rules are brought to task and don't spoil it for the rest. I am very comfortable that if a club is reported to us, we will handle that information sensitively, and then we'll do what we can to make sure that club is educated into where they're going wrong. And if need be, we'll involve sort of the broader companies in the game that hopefully get through that. So I think that's it in terms of the general sort of questions that have been answered and the topics that we've covered. Thanks ever so much, Natalie. As I say, thank you for your time at a very, very busy time and for helping us out in this respect.
It's been great. I've got off the phone for an hour.
Thanks again, and I'll hand back to Sammy to close.
Okay, thank you, Natalie and Jim, for all that information. I'm just trying to get your CPD code up here on the screen, so bear with me one second while I figure out the technology. there it is. Hopefully you can all see that. This webinar will be available in the members area of the Bigger website in the next few hours. We thank you for joining us. We thank Natalie for her time, and we thank Jim. And we hope that you'll join us again soon for the next Continue to Learn Extra webinar. For details of future webinars, please visit the What's On page of the Bigger website. So thanks so much. I'm going to end the meeting there.
The Green Room Golf Course podcast is produced by myself, Carl Hansel, on behalf of the British and International Golf Greenkeepers Association. For questions, comments and concerns, you can get in touch with me by emailing carl@bigger.co.uk. That's Carl with a K. You can also join the conversation on social media using @greenroombigger. And we've also got a Facebook page where all the latest notices, news releases and information from Bigger can be found. We're also on Instagram using @bigger_HQ. Subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. The more people know about the sports turf industry, the more understanding they will have about the hard work of Bigger members and other greenkeepers. And speaking of Bigger membership, if you're inspired by what you hear to progress your career in greenkeeping, then a major first step is signing up to the association. The opportunities for career development are countless and potentially life-changing, such as volunteer opportunities at major tournaments and educational opportunities across Europe and the USA. Don't forget, if you're a golfer and you've got any questions about anything you hear on the podcast, have a conversation with the greenkeepers at your club. They've got the expertise to explain what's happening at the course and how it fits into the team's long-term vision to improve playability and enjoyment of the facility.